We'll get back to our conversation with Aaron Murakami as we continue to delve into synchronicity, or as Carl Jung called it, meaningful coincidence. And a little bit later in the show, I'll tap into your stories and you can tell me about some of the meaningful coincidences that have occurred in your life. Here's one again from top10s.com. It has to be one of the biggest long shots in history. Back in May of 1944, retired school teacher Leonard Dawes, who had been compiling the daily crossword puzzle for London's Daily Telegraph newspaper for over 20 years, put together a series of puzzles that somehow managed to include the names of two of the landing beaches, Utah and Omaha, along with several other super secret code words like Overlord, Mulberry, and Juno. Nobody outside of General Eisenhower's staff was supposed to know. Assuming Dawes was a German agent, they instantly interrogated the man, only to release him a short time later once they became convinced the words were entirely randomly chosen. While the chances of inadvertently using one of the code words is not remarkable, Dawes' puzzles contained no fewer than 5 code words all over the course of 2 weeks. The odds for such a thing happening has to be considered close to 1 in a billion. All right, Aaron Murakami on the other side, and synchronicities right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Aaron Murakami. Aaron, before I get back into time travel meditation, I just wanted to ask you about the purpose of some of these meaningful coincidences. And previously I mentioned this case where the son of Abraham Lincoln was rescued by the brother of John Wilkes Booth. So you have the son of the president, who's later assassinated, rescued by the brother of the assassin. And of course, that only has meaning after the fact, after the assassination. And then we look back and we see this incredible, unbelievable synchronous event, but it doesn't have meaning when it happens, only later. So what is the purpose?
Well, I think it's going to be unique for each individual. And what I found was that, for example, in February week of 1995, when I had a long string of synchronicities, I call that kind of my waking up trip, because those synchronicities that happened at that time are what really kind of woke me up. And what I saw was that what I kept seeing repeating over and over in my life, for example, like a certain number or whatever it happened to be, I realized that that's for me. And too many people get caught up in, maybe they see some rare strange bird or a butterfly or something. And from then on, you know, they practically go out of their way to have other people pay attention and look for that one particular bird or butterfly or whatever happens to be, thinking that there's an intrinsic meaning for everybody for that one particular thing. And from my experience, what I see is that the synchronicities that unfold and those type of meaningful ones really just have meaning for me.
All right. So is there such a thing as just a coincidence? In other words, there's no causality, there's no connection, there's no real meaning, it's just happenstance. Do those exist, or should we be looking for sort of an underlying connection with everything?
Well, as far as coincidence, the way the average thinking on coincidences is just something that just happens to happen. I'm pretty sure that they do happen. I can't relate to that in my life, and I haven't been able to for years, because everything is just compounded so deep that it's obvious that there's something else going on.
So you were giving us some exercises, and again, these are listed in the Synchronicity Handbook, which is available for Coast listeners tonight. It's a free download from your website. Give us that again.
Okay, the website is emediapress.com, and on there, it's the link Synchronicity right next to the little graphic book cover, the Synchronicity Handbook. And when you click on that, it'll download a PDF. I just got a couple messages from some people that they weren't able to download it. My server just exploded at about 95% capacity.
That happens from time to time.
So if, everybody just stays patient and downloads it later or whatever, the download should work just fine. And underneath that, there is a special I'm running for all the listeners of Coast to Coast for my book, A Course in Mind Power, which is kind of the full expanded book that I put together that explains a lot of the science behind the synchronicity, the ideomotor effect, going into the science with Thomas Laycock, William Carpenter, Dr. Edmund Jacobson, and so forth.
Okay, so let's... we were talking before the break about time travel meditation. This is one of the exercises, a concept that you developed to increase the frequency and the magnitude of the synchronicities in our lives.
Yes.
And you talked about driving through Montana, mm-hmm. and you wanted to be able to predict, a little exercise, predict the colors of the cars that were going to be coming in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. And you weren't hitting on many of them. And then you got into this time travel meditation and... Just explain how that worked again.
So I wasn't having very much luck guessing what color car was coming towards me in the opposite lane, going westbound when I was going eastbound. And what I started to do was imagine myself, my future self, 30 seconds in the future, or maybe it was 15 seconds or whatever, imagining my future self looking at the color of the cars and willfully sending that back to me into the past. 15 seconds in the past.
And then immediately you were finding the results where you were hitting on 7, 8, sometimes even 9 out of 10
yes.
cars for the next half hour.
Right. But the other part to it was after I started doing this, I simultaneously also started to, whenever I called out a car that was correct, I would send the color of that car back to my past self to give the continuity between past, present, and future.
Oh, interesting.
And synchronistically, right. Tomorrow morning I'm actually going to be driving on that exact strip of road in Montana, so I can head down south of Butte to go into Idaho to see the eclipse.
Now that would be interesting to see if that's a repeatable experiment. If you were to record that
mm-hmm.
and do the same time travel meditation, and then let's see how many you the colors of the cars, how many you hit. Would you be willing to try that?
It's possible. I was actually planning on having somebody else drive, and I was going to sleep for about the first 4 hours
okay.
till we get to Butte, because I was
all right.
planning on
we'll
being
save,
up until 2 in the morning.
We'll save that. That's true. We'll save that one for another time. But so the idea here is you're increasing awareness of the present moment,
yes.
then you're sending information to your past self, and then you're receiving information from your future self.
Exactly.
So how do you, what's the exercise that you do in order to learn to do this time travel meditation? It's not going to happen right away, I'm guessing.
Well, for me on that trip, it did, but there's kind of a beginner's luck to a lot of these consciousness experiences where there's not a lot of expectation, so you're kind of free from an agenda, and a lot of those things can happen a lot quicker. The first time a lot of people start trying these, so yes, then it can possibly get a little more difficult, and then with practice, then there becomes a mastery of it.
Okay. So there's another exercise you do. It's called the devised method of manifestation, right?
Right.
How does that work?
Yeah, so that goes more into the concept of law of attraction, which is all tied into synchronicity, really, and because it's synchronizing us with what our desire is. And devise is a word that obviously means you're devising or trying to come up with something. And the DE stands for desire. And so, first of all, I like to preface it with the fact that, you know, there's a lot of different schools of thought in law of attraction. And one that I disagree with is putting ourselves in a state to receive something. Because if we open ourselves up to receive something that we want, it just reinforces to the subconscious mind that we don't already have it. And that's detrimental. And so what we do instead of... Well, what the desire part is to desire it so strong that you really get your adrenaline pumping, like a burning desire where it's just really in your gut and you can just feel how strong you want it. The VIS stands for visualization, where we're visualizing that we already have it, not that we will have it or we do have it, but that it's already been given to us, and we see it with all our emotions, with every sense. We feel it, we see it, we smell it. And then the E is emotionalize it, and we emotionalize it to the point that we can literally bring ourselves to an ecstasy, because that emotional voltage right there is what ties it into the subconscious mind. That voltage, that emotional voltage, is the glue that sticks those to the subconscious mind for it to go to work. And when doing those all together, sometimes I will be so thankful for something that I'm working towards, but as far as I'm concerned, it's already been given to me. Which I believe even, you know, biblically it says, know that it has already been given to you. So it's not asking for something, it's being thankful for what's already been given to you. And when you have that emotional voltage crank through the roof so much that it can even bring tears to your eyes and drop you to your knees, you're that grateful for it, that really triggers magic. And to me, that is my basic method of prayer.
I seem to recall a conversation again with your colleague, Jeff, a story, the two of you were on a road trip. And he sort of says, you know, I'm just there. The phone rings, and Aaron says, we're going here, and I follow. And this was a particular road trip. I'm not sure if it was Seattle or something. I just seemed to light on the. I remember him talking about you dropping to your knees in somebody's driveway, and
okay,
again,
yeah,
you were in tears. Do you remember? It was with Victor. Okay, What happened?
Yeah, so my friend Victor. At this time, he's been in the food service businesses and has operated cafeterias. And what his goal was to create a whole natural, like organic food menu for the school district. And so at this time, I had my, like a vitamin shop, health food store, and occasionally there would be different conferences where supplement manufacturers and so forth would get there, would go there, and there'd be different presenters talking on different subjects. And so I had a guest pass, and, you know, I knew he's interested in that kind of stuff, so I invited him along as a guest. Well, we stayed at my friend Tony's house, and his wife is a gourmet cook, or his wife at the time is a gourmet cook. And we just sat around, started talking, and suddenly come to find out, she had fully developed an entire meal plan for schools with healthy eating options. Already turnkey that she could just hand right over to Victor, exactly what he's been looking for, and it would take him months to develop that. And she just happens to have it just sitting there. And so when we went outside, we're staying at a hotel, so I think when we went outside, that's when, you know, just myself feeling how grateful I am for something like that to happen. You know, what are the chances of those two things lining up like that? Yeah, I literally got on my knees and was just so thankful for that experience.
Wow. Wow. And you say this is sort of your form of prayer, but do you believe that there is, I mean, you call it the universal mind or the Akashic record, but do you believe that there is an intelligence or an architect or the ultimate geometer who's behind all of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I absolutely believe in God. I believe that God is, when I mention the infinite mind or the universe or the collective, that infinite intelligence to me is what God is, that dictates everything and designs everything in the entire universe. So absolutely.
Do you think that this law of attraction or a similar model of your Murakami model of synchronicity, do you think that Tesla was using this when he was creating and inventing, virtually inventing the 20th century?
Yeah, I believe so. He was operating at a pretty high level of consciousness, and he had a lot of influence from some ancient Hindu teachings. And also, his father had contact with the Vatican, and he had received various books which were not readily available to the public. There was some type of, I don't recall the names of it, but I have copies of a few Catholic books that actually go into different spiritual practices to enhance these kind of things in your life.
So can you give me another example where synchronicity has directly impacted an invention that you've been working away at? Maybe you hit an obstacle and all of a sudden some synchronous event happened, lifted the veil, or was the final piece in the puzzle?
Well, I remember John Bedini had released some of his lab notes on what's known as an Ed Gray motor, and in that there was a one particular diode, which is kind of like a one-way valve for electricity, a simple way to put it. And most people who looked at it kept saying, well, John drew it backwards, which wouldn't be too surprising because John is sometimes dyslexic and transposes letters and is not the best speller and stuff. But when I looked at it, not having a background in electrical engineering, I never knew it wasn't supposed to make sense, and it was actually the only thing that ever did make sense, and very few people agreed with me on that, and that always kind of stuck in the back of my mind. And then, so a couple years later, in my forum, somebody contacted me and said somebody is posting some experiments on some ignition stuff on another forum. Took them a couple times to really get me to get over there and look at it, because people are sending me stuff all the time, and I just don't have time to look at everything. And as soon as I saw it, I knew exactly what was going on. And the explanation everybody was giving on it, I could see was obviously wrong, and I could see how a diode was connected in this circuit, and I saw the real mechanism. And I said, this is nothing, this ignition system is nothing more than a small-scale version of the gray tube patent, which was a switching circuit that controlled this gray motor. Whether that tube was a red herring or not, that's one matter. But the fact that the mechanics of how it worked was exact, and when I saw that, I knew exactly how to implement a diode on a simplified circuit to take any off-the-shelf, like a capacitive discharge ignition module, like a performance ignition modification people can buy at different speed shops or online or whatever, and just add a diode in the right place, and suddenly I invented the world's most efficient and effective way of making the plasma ignition with an off-the-shelf performance module in a high-voltage diode. And the odds of that happening for that circuit to actually be able to work in that way is kind of astronomical.
Hmm. Amazing. It just the hits just keep on coming with you. Do people find that just because they're associated with you, that they're hanging around you, that these synchronous events start to happen with them as well, without maybe even going through the discipline or following the protocols in your handbook or your Murakami model?
Yes, I've received plenty of comments with different family and friends over the years that the more they spend time with me, these things just automatically start happening for them, almost like, but the Murakami model of synchronicity would explain that as well, where, you know, we obviously, if I'm going to be friends with somebody, we're going to have some type of commonalities there. Our subconscious minds know that, and different things that they're looking for are going to be in resonance with different methods that I might be able to help them move in that direction. And so, to me, it would almost be obvious that those kind of things would happen.
And can you give me an example of someone in your circle who, just simply by being in your presence, these synchronous events started happening with them?
Let's see. For example, at my last conference, so I just had my 6th annual Energy Science and Technology Conference in Hayden, Idaho. And at the end of the conference, I believe it was maybe on Saturday night, my friend Cliff, who did my photography for the weekend, I'm sitting there at the bar having a drink with him, and we're talking. And, you know, he doesn't really know anything about remote viewing. He maybe have heard about it. I don't even remember what we were talking about originally, but within a short period of time, within about 2 minutes, suddenly I'm explaining to him the ideomotor effect and remote viewing and how these concepts all kind of tie together. Instantly, somebody just walks out of the room, walks over to us, somebody named Lance, who was at the conference. He literally walks up to me and he says, do you know anything about remote viewing?
Oh,
and Cliff looks over at me, kind of dumbfounded, because we're at an energy conference and just spontaneously somebody walks up and asks me about remote viewing. And we've just been talking about it for the last 5 or 10 minutes.
Precisely. The way it works with me, on the odd occasion that it does, usually, maybe not surprisingly, because I'm a huge music fan, but it will happen. I'll be thinking, and I know this is very common with people, but it happens with me. I'm thinking of a song. I'll have a song in my head, and then I'll walk into, I don't know, the dentist's office, and there's John Fogerty rocking all over the world playing as it takes us into the break. Maybe you can explain that on the other side. Aaron Murakami, Synchronicity. Stay with us right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. And NASA has come up with an ambitious new plan to cool down the supervolcano by using it as an energy source. The natural beauty of Yellowstone National Park attracts thousands of tourists each year, of course, but not far below the surface is an increasingly large chamber of molten hot magma that we're told could erupt at any time. It contains as much as 200 to 600 cubic kilometers of molten rock. And this vast subterranean cavern is part of one of the largest known supervolcanoes. When it erupts, it'll cause untold devastation across hundreds of square miles and impact the climate on a global level. Now, in a renewed bid to stop this from ever happening, scientists at NASA have come up with an ambitious plan to turn the supervolcano into a near limitless source of geothermal energy. And you can read the whole story at coasttocoastam.com in the news section, where our webmaster tonight, Sean Latasor, has posted that and many other tantalizing tidbits. I'm back with more of my conversation with Aaron Murakami as we discuss synchronicity on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. Aaron Murakami stays with us. We're talking about synchronicity, and his synchronicity handbook is available tonight as a gift to Coast listeners at his website. It's a free download. Just go to emediapress.com, the Synchronicity Handbook, and there's some exercises in there that'll help you, I guess, strengthen or increase your ability to bring synchronous events into your life. Some call it the law of attraction. And there's also, Aaron, this more in-depth book. It's a course in mind power, Catalyst for Transformation. Just give us a sense of what's involved in that course.
Well, what that does is kind of give a background on the ideomotor effect, because that's really at the basis of this. And then a lot of it goes into really a lot of my experiences with some different Qigong exercises, which one of the things in so-called mind power books, mostly written in the Western world, is that a lot of it is missing one of the primary keys, and what that is to build up our own life force energy, or if you want to say chi, ki, prana, whatever you want to call it. There's exercises in there that are very simple. Anybody can do them. And what it does is it increases the capacitance within our own body to store this potential. And it's basically a form of light potential. And the more that we have in our body and the more that we cultivate it, the more light that we have in our mind to be able to see. And I mean with vision.
All right. I mentioned before the break, for me, synchronicity happens most often with music. I'll be thinking of a song. I'll have that earworm, as some call it. I can't get that song out of my head. And then I'll walk into a store or the dentist's office, and that song, and I'm not talking about, you know, Hey Jude or something that's in high rotation. I'm talking about what I call deep cuts. And lo and behold, that song will be playing somewhere. Is that synchronicity, or what's going on there?
I would say it is synchronicity, and I think for a lot of people, even myself, that's a common occurrence with thinking about a song and suddenly it comes on the radio, which you're, you know, if you're listening to music, especially a station you enjoy, you're probably at peace, maybe have a sense of joy about the music you're listening to, kind of unattached to anything, and what you're present what you're doing in the present moment is your subconscious mind has access to what you're listening to in a few minutes. And so it's similar to the time travel meditation, except it's done totally at an unconscious level where you're receiving that information, and that's jogging the idea in the mind where that song comes up. But I believe you are pulling it from your future self.
I'm pulling it from my future self. How cool is that? What can I do with that, though? How can that... Here's the selfish me talking. How can that benefit me, Aaron?
Well, let's see if, for example, if somebody is looking at maybe building a business or something, or you know, doing something, you know, practical in their lives, with maybe business decisions or something like that. It's always helpful to be in the right place at the right time. Between the Murakami model of synchronicity, the time travel meditation, and the devise method, that basically cranks it through the roof, the ability to be in the right place at the right time, which obviously is going to be beneficial for anybody who's in business or networking, or whether it's somebody who's inventing, maybe somebody's in a music group and they're looking for just that one person, and that they need to feel, you know, play whatever instrument in their band, and then suddenly, you know, they just walk into a store and start chatting with somebody who just happens to play that instrument or something. So, you know, being able to be in the right place at the right time can be beneficial in all aspects of our lives, relationships, you name it.
I don't know if you know or are familiar with David Rico's book, The Power of Coincidence, How Life Shows Us What We Need to Know. But he writes, we do not create our destiny. We participate in its unfolding. Synchronicity works as a catalyst toward the working out of that destiny. How do you feel about it? I mean, the name, for example, the Law of Attraction sort of implies that we are manifesting our destiny. We are creating our destiny. Do you believe that we're creating our destiny, or are you more in line with David Rico that we participate in its unfolding?
I believe it's basically happening simultaneously, and we're going about it as a co-creator. The more that we surrender to the universe, more that we surrender to the will of God, so to speak, which is really how I would see it and how I do see it, is that we tend to start doing things that are in alignment with the higher purpose. Basically doing God's will, for example. And with the concept that know that it has already been given to you, the more that we get detached from our own agendas, we start to get into flow with things that are basically already set up for us. When we start to make things happen for ourselves, or we want to force something to happen in one way or another, that's basically our, you know, kind of satisfying our own ego that we're just going along this path, but it's not really unfolding in any kind of magical or miraculous way. But as soon as we start to detach from all that, we let go of it, and we surrender, then what happens is we start coming into alignment with a higher purpose, and then we come, it's basically the path of least resistance. And when we get into that mode of being, where we are surrendering to that, then we get to experience these kind of things in the shortest period of time because they're basically already laid out. All we had to do is stop our own agenda.
Are there limits to this, for example? Because there is, you've agreed, a higher a power that's sort of overseeing this. But, I mean, if someone got really good at creating synchronous events, I mean, they... You know, potentially they could win the lottery. I mean, are there things that prevent greed from taking over, for example? I mean, are there any laws underlying synchronicity that prevent that from happening?
If somebody is doing something coming from a greedy foundation, I believe that the synchronicities can still play out for them. I don't think that that's going to be a problem. But if there's some nefarious intent or something like that, and it's going to be hurting somebody, or some greed or selfishness is involved with that, they're going to experience some different synchronicities that's going to put them back in line pretty quick.
What's the difference between synchronicity and precognition?
Precognition, basically the Murakami model of synchronicity would explain that, and so would the, because I see things ahead of time all the time. One example of that was the last place my dad worked at when he retired from the military, you know, grew up as an Air Force brat, was the Foreign Technology Division, the spooky place on Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And when we were living there in Fairborn, Ohio, there was a couple weeks where I kept seeing things that were going to happen. And in this dream that I had, it wasn't like I was in the dream. I was observing from a point in space. And what I saw were two Russian MiGs flying towards each other. And they tried to do an aerial maneuver where they would each one would rotate in the opposite way so the bottoms of the planes would just glide past each other. Well, as they're coming towards each other, two pilots ejected. Parachutes opened up, the planes crashed, the parachutes opened up, and they drifted safely to the ground. And so the way I'm thinking is, well, that's representative of something. So I called my friend Carlos over in Japan. He was still at the base. And I said, did anybody get in a head-on collision? Because we were a bunch of like racing car freaks and stuff during high school time. And I thought maybe it represents two people got in a head-on collision. Both drivers are okay, and that's what the dream meant. And he said, yeah, actually, Pat so-and-so's younger brother, Jason, got in a head-on collision on the back flight line of the base, and you know, everything is okay. And I was like, whew, okay, well, that's what that means. Well, I always share my dreams with a lot of my friends around me and with my mom. And, you know, growing up, we always shared dreams with each other. And I told her that one in front of my brothers, in front of my dad, who's always very skeptical about those kind of things, and was pretty convinced that's what it meant. Well, a couple days later, my mom calls me out because the news is on TV. Her and my dad are sitting on a couch. Nearly break my neck running out the my bedroom door to go see what it is. And here's a news report in Fairview or Fairfield, England, where there's an air show. And what they show is two Russian MiGs flying towards each other. They do this maneuver where they each rotate in the opposite direction. Both pilots escaped, parachutes came down, and the pilots were okay. It wasn't symbolic of that dream. They could have videotaped my dream, what I had, and it was exactly what I saw.
Wow.
So that's like a precognition. Well, The thing about it is that event happened in the future when I had that dream. Why did I see it? Was it just for me to have a lesson that I need to wake up? I always believed in that kind of stuff. But experiencing it just takes that belief to a whole nother level. Like, okay, I believed it. Now it's like, you know, kind of irrefutable. Nobody can tell me that's not possible. And so my present self at that point when I had that dream obviously had access to the future. So that's one possible mechanism of how these precognition things happen, is that we are witnessing it or we are receiving it from our future selves as a possibility.
I'm not sure what I find more amazing, the fact that you had this precognitive dream that was so accurate and actually played out, or that your father, who worked at the foreign technology division at Wright-Patt, is a skeptic.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he's seen everything.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to believe in too much of that, or at least that's just what he's telling me. But yeah, so those type of dreams would happen. And actually during that time, shortly after that, wasn't too long after that, I had a dream I was observing from a point in space at the end of a lake. And I looked up over these trees, and this passenger airliner was coming at me. And it slowly lowered down towards the water. One of the wings tipped down, hit the water, flipped, and it crashed. And I knew everybody died. And then again, the thing about these is I talk about them before they happen, so they weren't like an after-the-fact thing. I called my friends in Japan, told my family, so everybody knew I had already explained it before it happened. So like I said, I always have witnesses. And on this particular one, I woke up, told my mom again, called my friend in Japan, asked if anybody flipped upside down, even though I knew that dream was actually happening and wasn't just representative of something. Well, same thing. A few days later, my mom calls me out to look at the news. There wasn't video footage of it, but the report was that there's a passenger airliner that took off the runway in somewhere in China, and it, as it was going over some trees, it had engine failure in one wing. Wing tipped down, crashed down on the lake, flipped upside down, and killed everybody.
Oh, my.
And, you know, that really kind of got to me, because I'm thinking, well, what am I supposed to do with this, you know? I'm not going to call the news or anything. They're going to think I'm crazy if I have these kind of dreams and say something. So I just kind of kept it to myself as far as, you know, my little community, you know, my family and friends and so forth. But that kind of thing has been an occurrence throughout my life, these precognitive things that will either come in dreams, or I'll have flashes ahead of time, or I'll just pull numbers out of the air that correspond to things pretty profound.
Well, speaking of tragic events, this one really, I think, goes down as one of the spooky coincidences of all times. And that was Morgan Robertson's book, Futility or the Wreck of the Titan. And he's basically writing about this voyage of a British luxury liner, the HMS Titan. And this, again, was written in 1898. It hits an iceberg while crossing the Northern Atlantic. Sound familiar? Sinks with a larger loss of life, in part because of insufficient lifeboats on board. So again, many people know about this, but the similarities between this fictional story and the real-life loss of the luxury liner, the Titanic, nearly the same name, Titan, Titanic, it happens 14 years later. Both the Titan and the Titanic were triple-screw luxury ships. They were both the same, about 800 feet long. They both hit an iceberg. They both happened in the month of April. They were both traveling around 25 knots. It goes on and on. The same, you know, 2,500 deaths in the fictional account and in the real life account. I mean, they're not identical in every detail, but my word, is that precognition, or I don't know. What do you think is happening there?
I think it is a form of precognition, and those type of examples are, you know, throughout history. And one thing with tragedies is that there's so much emotional impact there with the actual event that it makes a strong signal line in the collective, which means a strong signal that the subconscious can latch onto. You know, if we look at concepts such as the Global Consciousness Project, which was done at PEAR, the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research, where they determined that the intention, in fact, can influence the outcome of random event generators, white noise generators, and so forth. And what they see before big major events, like whether it's, you know, 9/11 or whether it's a tsunami somewhere or a big catastrophic earthquake, is that the output of the random event generators start going haywire, and they totally go off the chart and deviate from what's the expected 50-50, which means there's something in the collective that is being picked up on right before these events. And I believe that the mass consciousness involved with these catastrophic events are putting that strong of a signal into the line. So anybody who is somewhat receptive to that or in alignment with that may be picking up on that. That person who wrote that book that kind of parallels the story of the Titanic, you know, he may have thought, well, let's write a story about a, you know, ocean liner that crashes or something. And so little by little, through the ideomotor effect, his subconscious mind is going to be percolating these little tidbits of it to his conscious thinking mind to document it out, write a book, and it turns out to be running parallel with something that happens 14 years later.
Does that mean potentially then, Aaron, your inventions are coming to you from the future?
Anything like that, potentially you are grabbing it out of the future, and so that comes into concepts with, well, are we changing the entire timeline from that point on? Are we accelerating it, or did we just branch off in another timeline? But I've often thought that yes, some of these findings like this, especially when doing like remote viewing, for example, there's one particular consciousness technology which implemented my time travel meditation in a way where people could actually use this technology in the past to increase the synchronicities, and the primary operating method was discovered through remote viewing. And that means at that point it didn't exist yet in the present moment, and so it literally just yanked it right out of the future possibility with a certain amount of probability. And so once it was realized here in the moment and it was actually built, you know, then it comes into question. Did we just accelerate the entire timeline? Is that why things are starting to speed up and accelerate?
The scientific illiterate, which includes me, are often accused of attributing these things that we're talking about now too quickly to quantum mechanics. Mm-hmm. We throw that around, I think, a little too liberally. But let me ask you, because you are a scientific person, is the ideomotor and these other things you're discussing, is there a connection to quantum mechanics?
Well, I used to believe in quantum mechanics quite heavily. Actually, the first book I wrote is called The Quantum Key, even though it didn't really talk about quantum physics. It was more a book about the ether. But after studying a lot of this and the science of energy in and of itself, studying the works of people like Eric Dollard and so on, what I'm seeing is that I don't really believe in the quantum ideas so much anymore, and it's more about the ether. And Michael Faraday and J.J. Thompson, who's won the Nobel Prize, I believe, for the discovery of the electron, and what they wrote about was concepts, and then they're also experimentalists, which is what's important about it, is that there's something called tubes of induction, these Faraday tubes of induction. And what they are is almost like aligning these tubes of ether through space, and that's what connects one point to another. So there's not really a such thing as spooky action at a distance. It can be explained by the ether physics originally spelled out by Faraday and J.J. Thompson.
All right. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, open up the phone lines, and we'll listen to people's stories of synchronicity and serendipity. Here's Charles Bradley, the great screaming eagle of soul, taking us into the break with Changes on Coast to Coast AM.